This is East Carolina offensive coordinator Donnie Kirkpatrick. We are talking one of my favorite things, Pirate football, and the Sports Objective.
What's going on, Pirate Nation? Welcome into the Sports Objective. We're talking East Carolina Pirate football here on a Thursday evening. Very excited to take a look at games 4 and 10 of the 2023 schedule. On September 23rd, the Running Bulldogs of Gardner-Webb will be coming to Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium at 6 o'clock kickoff on ESPN+. And right now, to preview that matchup, welcome into the show for the first time, the play-by-play voice of the Running Bulldogs, Phil Constantino. Phil, we appreciate your time tonight.
Bubba, good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Coach Lamb is doing a heck of a job there in Boiling Springs, entering his fourth season this fall. His bloodlines in the coaching ranks, you know, run deep. His father, Hal, an excellent coach in the high school ranks down in Georgia, winning several state titles. And then Uncle Bobby, of course, everything he did at Furman and Mercer. So just first of all, I wanted to talk to you about Trey Lamb, who is just 33 years old.
Yeah, when he got to Gardner-Webb, he was hired in December of 2019. So just before I got to Gardner-Webb, a few months later. So we've aligned as far as being together for the same amount of seasons. But Trey was, I believe, the youngest coach in all of Division I college football at the time. And when you meet him, you can tell that he is the son of a coach and the nephew of a coach. There's, and I mean this in the best way possible, there's a level of self-confidence and almost arrogance to him. He doesn't beat around the bush. He's straightforward and to the point. And from my perspective, he's great to work with because he always gives you what you need, but he's also not going to waste his time kind of shooting the breeze with you. He's just a good all-around dude. He's a heck of a football coach. He's an offensive guru, very much the mold of these modern air raid, spread it out, snap the football 90 times kind of guys. But it has been successful, and he has been successful at a program that, quite frankly, 2 decades in Division I hadn't been that successful. He's really turned this thing around. So, great dude, great coach, just recently signed a contract extension, and it is incredibly well-deserved.
No doubt. 7-6, 5-0 last year, but of those six losses, you know, majority of those were very competitive. You played 3 games against FBS opponents, and very good FBS opponents at that, Coastal Carolina, Marshall, and Liberty. Those games, in 2 of them, could have very easily gone the Running Bulldogs' way.
Well, if you think about it, it was a wild schedule. I think it had to be, I don't have a number on this, but I think it had to be one of the toughest schedules in the country in the FCS. Those 3 FBS games, Coastal, Marshall, and Liberty that you mentioned, that's the first time Gardner-Webb's ever played 3 FBS games. And all of that came about because of some late conference realignment that kind of jacked things up in the Big South. There were some open dates. And next thing you know, late in 2021, early 2022, you're still worrying about a 2022 football schedule. And you and I both know in this sport, this schedule is booked usually 5-10 years out. That doesn't happen. So that's how that came to be. And quite frankly, they probably should have won 2 of those games. They turned the football over 5 times against Coastal Carolina, lost by 4. That includes the final drive in which they were going in to score to try and win it. Same thing happened versus Liberty. And if you extrapolate this even further, the year before in 2022, they did the exact same thing against Georgia Southern in the first game of the year, where they were down by 5, had the football. Georgia Southern case, they were driving and were on the fringe of the red zone and turned it over. So they've played 5 FBS games in the 3 years under Coach Lamb. And in 3 of those games, you could legitimately argue they should have won. And so if that doesn't show you the growth of the program, if that doesn't show you just how good Gardner-Webb is and has been the last couple of years, then I don't know what does. And also, to your point, that schedule was not just three tough FBS games. There were no real walkover games. I mean, they played in the non-conference in the regular season two ranked FCS teams, Elon and Mercer. And then in the playoffs, beat Eastern Kentucky. It was the first ever FCS playoff victory in program history. Beat Eastern Kentucky for the first win. And then played a top five ranked William and Mary team. And that's how the season ended. So 7-6 overall, I do think is incredibly misleading. You mentioned the 5-0 record, unbeaten in league play. They took care of the 6-team Big South last year. But an incredibly difficult schedule, especially given the level and what they're competing against. So 7-6 to me needs a little bit of a qualifier, if that makes sense.
No doubt. Because with the results against those FBS opponents, you would certainly, I was surprised when I saw six losses, but then once I looked at the schedule in full, as you said, it made more sense, but a heck of a 7-6 football team for sure. And
best 7-6 team in the country, probably.
No doubt. I'd say that what you were saying as far as it being the top FCS schedule is very probable. But before we dive into the personnel, taking a look at this year's schedule, in addition to the traveling to East Carolina on September 23rd, you begin the season up in Boone against App State. So another very challenging September.
Yeah, and two FBS games on the schedule this year, which is a little bit more normal. And I think Coach Lamb likes that. But to be completely honest with you, with how much they have coming back, the little bit that I've seen the team around summer workouts, the little bit that I've spoken to the coaching staff, they genuinely believe that they can go to Boone and win. Now, you know how good that Appalachian State program has been over the last few years. But if you look at the track record of what Gardner Webb has done, one of the preseason polls has a number 22 in the country in FCS football. They're returning 21 starters. It's a little bit misleading because they've got 15 guys on the defense that in their past have legitimate, fairly long-term starting experience. So if you go position by position, it's more like 17 starters. But you return 17 of 22, both sides of the ball, coming off of an unbeaten conference record and a conference championship. A lot of confidence, a lot of experience, and what they've done against FBS opponents in the past. I'm not saying they're going to go to App State and win, but there's a legitimate belief that in these FBS games, that both of them, App State and East Carolina, I think there's a legitimate belief that they can win. And it doesn't always work that way when FCS teams walk off the bus at these big FBS stadiums.
A couple minutes ago, you were talking about the philosophy of Coach Lamb on the offensive side. Tell us about some of the personnel there. I was reading earlier, you lost your quarterback who threw for right at 3,000 yards a year ago.
Yeah, and Bailey Fisher was he was a heck of a player. He was the Big South Offensive Player of the Year. He's actually now on the staff working with the quarterbacks since he graduated. But that's 65% completion. That's a little over 2,900 yards passing. 19 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, and I think what was most underrated about him, because he had such good mechanics and he looked the part as a passer, he rushed for 11 touchdowns, and he really could run the football. Tons of speed, but effective use of the spread option. And that is something that Trey Lamb's offense has always been predicated on. He loves having a quarterback that can run. Now, there are three guys in the mix to replace him this year. But ultimately, yes, the quarterback position is a big question mark. Everywhere else, they return talent that they're comfortable with. Everywhere else. Starting with Nari Gaither, who's in his past been an All-American. Last year, he was a first-team All-Conference running back. In fact, he's a three-time All-Conference player. He's using his COVID year here. Last year, rushed for over 1,000 yards, about 102 yards per game. That's pretty darn good. But he also is a great receiver out of the backfield that they use effectively on swing routes and others. So they have a lot of talent. There's no question about it. The question is, you got to get the quarterback position right, but you also, do you have a guy in the program right now that can fill the role of such a talented quarterback, Bailey Fisher, who graduated, and he was able to run the football? The three guys in the mix right now, Ty Lyles, Coastal Carolina transfer, Geno English, a Florida State transfer, and Matthew Caldwell, who's the one returner from that trio. He was the backup last year. Bailey actually, I think, was hurt for a game or two, and Caldwell started. He's the presumptive heir to the throne, though my understanding is that it's a pretty open battle, and whoever takes that spot is going to have big shoes to fill.
Someone I wanted to ask you about, you were mentioning running backs transferring over from East Carolina, as is so common in this day and age of the transfer portal, and Nemo Squire. Talk about how Nemo Squire has done since arriving in Boiling Springs.
Yeah, I mean, I personally haven't had really a chance to get out there and look at it, so I don't know that I'm the best one to answer that question. We've had a lot going on in our athletic department here. But I'll tell you, he's in the mix. And I'll tell you that I know that Coach Lamb, he doesn't miss on many recruits. He knows what he's looking for. He knows what he's looking for. And if it fits, he'll be out there. And there has been in this offense, and they're running 90 to 95 snaps a game. It's about as fast of an offense as I've seen in college football. As fast as some of those Washington State teams, and trying to think who else has spread it around so well over the last few years. They hurry up to the line and snap the ball. So that oftentimes means they are rolling through skill position players. So what you see on the depth chart, you know, as a play-by-play guy, you make your chart, you make your two deep, you better have another roster handy, because they may go three or four deep at a position. So do be mindful of that you're going to see them rolling through players.
Who are some of the top receivers that are returning?
Well, I also think that is a little bit of a question mark. They lost T.J. Luther, who was an All-American, I think second or third teamer by one of those, million media outlets, Phil Steele maybe. But he signed as an undrafted free agent with the New York Jets, and there was some talk about him getting drafted at one point. He was a first-team All-Conference player, league's leading receiver, very talented guy. Who had transferred over 2 years in the program from Wofford. That said, Caleb Borders is a young freshman that came on late last year. Justin Franklin is in the mix. He's a returning player. Kareem Page is another player that came on late last year. Hakeem Meggett, Malik Huggins. And then also there's a guy by the name of A.J. Johnson who joined the program, I want to say, in the middle of last season. Got some practices in, but never dressed for a game. And he is a former four-star recruit. Some things fell through, and he ended up at Gardner-Webb. And I believe this will technically be his freshman year coming up here. He's a New Orleans product. So there is talent in the room. There is a lot of returning players. Again, they lost the star, but those are the names to look out for. And it's going 8-9 deep. And I'm serious that it's more than likely that every single snap they'll line up four wide. And then with how quick they're going, it is in and out. I've even heard Trey talk about, if we throw a deep ball, I have to, with the pace that we play. Say we throw a go pattern, 50-yard pass incomplete. That receiver has to come off the field. There's not enough time with the pace that they play for that receiver to get back on sides and do what they want to do. So that's how much they sometimes roll through those skill position players.
To be as competitive as a program as the Bulldogs were a year ago, you obviously have to be good in the trenches. What does this team return as far as the offensive line?
Well, I think it starts with Gabe Thompson. He's probably going to play center. They've moved offensive linemen position to position a lot. And I think they found a rhythm about halfway through last year with Gabe Thompson at center. He's a big boy, 6'3", 304 from Spartanburg, South Carolina, and he can move some folks. Another all-conference guy. Great kid, class president. He's involved in things as high as being on the student committee for hiring our new athletic director that started last October. Just a phenomenal human being.
Gabe's been around the program for a while now, and I believe this will be his last year of eligibility. Outside of that, Kyle Snyder is another guy who's a grad student, fifth-year player on the interior line. I would say that they may have some questions at the tackle positions. We'll see. They lost an all-conference offensive lineman, Clayton Frady, who was a North Carolina kid that transferred up to Virginia Tech. So that's a position where they may have to replace a couple of folks. I think the overall theme of what you'll probably hear from me personnel-wise is that there are definitely more holes on the offense than there are on the defense. Almost everyone on the defense comes back. Of those 21 starters that I told you about that had starting experience, really 17 positions, if you go position by position, well, 15 of those 21 are on the defense. So the offense has some holes, but I don't think in recruiting there's any lack of talent. And the biggest question mark, as I said before, quarterback. That's you know how that goes. That's big.
Talking about that veteran defense, it was a unit that allowed 29 points and 395 yards a season ago. So, who are, some of those many faces that are returning that are, all conference caliber players?
Yeah, and those numbers you mentioned, Bubba, you put them in perspective a little bit. Think about how many snaps they're trying to play offensively. So those numbers are even better. They may seem pretty good in today's college football. Those numbers are even better when you consider, what the margins are that the offense is putting up and how many snaps on the field that the defense ends up playing. And so as a result, you will see them cycle through defensive linemen quite a bit. The linebacker positions, I think those are pretty set. I don't even see where there would be any position battles in camp. William McCraney, Brendan Jackson, Ty Anderson, all conference players in the past. McCraney was the league leader. I think this was 2 years ago now. I lose track of time. Was the league leader in tackles in the Big South. Jackson and Anderson, good players. And then across the back, you have Raekwon Owsley, Jamari Brown, A.J. Thomas, T.J. Jones at the cornerback and safety spots. Those seven, I think, are set. Every single one of them is a returning player that is incredibly talented, either has been an all-conference guy. In Raekwon Owsley's case, he was on one of those All-America lists, or they have the potential to be an all-conference guy. All of them have extensive starting experience in their past. Jamari Brown is actually the signal caller for the defense at the safety position is kind of how they do it. Those seven are set. Up front, I think you can make an argument that the front four is set. The defensive ends, Ty French, an All-American, just a big-time player, probably a little bit undersized for the FBS, which is how that combined with when he was recruited during the COVID cycle is probably why he's at Gardner-Webb. And I think much to the excitement of Gardner-Webb fans in the Boiling Springs community, Gardner-Webb's been able to keep him. But he's an All-American and just a rangy 6'3", 230-pound defensive end who's kind of built more than like a linebacker. Will stand up off the edge a lot. They'll blitz him a lot. They'll even drop him back into pass coverage. He's a very versatile player. The other defensive end, Bryce Bass, he's a long 6'4", 250. I think his wingspan, he walks the hall, kind of looks more like he should be on Tim Kraft's basketball team. With how he can affect the play. Just that long wingspan really does damage. My guess is that he's pretty solidly going to start at the other defensive end spot. And then up front in the middle, Charlie Jackson and Willie Harris are likely your nose guard and defensive tackle. It's a 4-2-5 defense. I don't really foresee, of those 11 names, a whole lot of potential changes or other players starting there. That defense is pretty set. Josh Reardon has been a defensive coordinator from the start for Trey Lamb and has done a phenomenal job with them. The back seven, certainly set. And the front four, the only reason why I say maybe a position battle, I don't even want to call it that. It's because the amount of snaps they end up on the field for, you got to cycle through the big guys a little bit. So you'll see a little Chris Richardson. You'll see a little bit of Jai Barnes maybe. Some of the other guys that are listed on the depth chart at those defensive tackle positions who don't have as much experience.
Phil, really appreciate your time this afternoon. Before we let you go, I know we were discussing before we went live that you do know new East Carolina play-by-play voice and director of broadcasting, Chris Edwards. He was named the new voice of the Pirates this morning, replacing the late Jeff Charles, who unfortunately passed away back in early February. But, you know, what can you tell us about Chris?
Yeah, I know Chris a little bit. I don't know him incredibly well, but we've crossed paths some time. I was at Queens University in Charlotte before I got to Gardner-Webb 3 years ago. This would be my fourth season. And I think Chris at the time was actually doing a package of TV games with Catawba College, who was a big rival of ours who we played against in basketball. And Chris did some of those games. I know he did a bunch of other Catawba football games. Just a good dude, treats the broadcast with respect, has the respect of his peers. And I believe he's got some ECU ties in his past as well. I know the reputation in the Raleigh, Durham, and further northeast part of the state, kind of away from us. I know his reputation is certainly a good one. I've never heard anyone speak negatively about Chris at all. So you guys got a good one. And I look forward to seeing him on whatever was it, September 23rd, week four?
Yep. September 23rd, 6 o'clock. September 23rd.
I got three games to get through first, but I'll see you there.
Sounds good. Again, appreciate the time and tell folks how they can follow you on social media.
Well, at Phil Constantino, not hard to find. But I'd encourage them all to check out the team as well at GWU Sports on all the respective handles and GWUSports.com for all the information out of Gardner Webb's athletic communications department. I know sometimes those FBS games, some of your fans up there, Bubba, they you know, Gardner Webb rolls up and they, you know, they don't know a whole lot about him. And great work is done by that sports information department. And there's a lot of good information about them on there. So if you want to educate yourself before you come on out to the stadium for that one, that's where you can find it, all the info.
No doubt. I've certainly told other Pirate fans, me and my co-host on this show, just – you know, how dangerous Gardner Webb could be because, you know, you take a look at what they did a year ago, nearly knocking off Coastal Carolina and then Liberty as well, and then playing Marshall very competitively for the majority of that game up in Huntington. But, again, appreciate the time, and we'll catch up down the road.
Appreciate it, Bubba. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Right now we'll move from taking a look at Game 4 to Game 10. On November 11th, and the Pirates will travel down to Boca Raton to take on the Florida Atlantic Owls. And right now, to preview that matchup, I'm very excited to welcome back to the show the play-by-play voice of Florida Atlantic, and that's Ken LaVica. Ken, how are you?
Bubba, it's great to talk to you, man. It's been a while, so it's good to hear your voice. And I heard you talking about Jeff Charles, and this is my first time having any sort of platform with East Carolina fans. So belated, my condolences. He was one hell of a broadcaster, an even better person, and looking forward to meeting Chris once the season gets underway. But I always enjoy talking with you, and it's good to be back in the same conference now.
Yeah, it is. I appreciate you coming on, and you know, like you said, you know, very sad what happened with Jeff. I know Chris will do an excellent job, and that's one of the reasons that I really felt like Chris he was one of the guys that I had on the short list from the get-go, because not only is an East Carolina guy, he's obviously an excellent broadcaster, and he had the proper perspective on what transpired and would do nothing but honor Jeff's legacy. But, you know, before we dive into Tom Herman's ball club, you referenced the move to the American. And as you mentioned, East Carolina and Florida Atlantic were in the same league back in CUSA in 2013. I remember when you guys came to Dowdy-Ficklin for a Thursday night game.
Mm-hmm.
But just talk about that transition. Now, obviously, all the excitement of winning 35 games on the hardwood and making a Final Four with Dusty May. And then you've seen glimpses, especially under Lane Kiffin, on the gridiron.
Yeah, no question about it. Two Conference USA championships in 3 years under Lane Kiffin, two bowl wins under Lane Kiffin as well before he went on to Ole Miss. So this is a team that is transitioning into Tom Herman after three disappointing years under Willie Taggart. And it was not a question of the talent. A lot of the talent that Lane Kiffin had, Willie Taggart had, but it was just the execution wasn't there. It was a mistake-laden program. It was a program that faced a lot of hurdles from a luck standpoint, a matchup perspective, late losses across the board all 3 years. And so now you bring in one of the American's best coaches in conference history in Tom Herman, to see if he can rekindle some of the magic that he had in Houston before he went on to Texas. But it's been nothing but energy from Tom Herman. And I know that's not a tangible thing, but he's come in and he took some time away from the game, did some TV work. He is really, really an electric personality. And so there's certainly contrast between him and his predecessor. And again, not trying to show any disrespect to Willie Taggart, but it's just a completely different approach. And especially coming off of what the basketball program did and going to the Final Four, this is the first time that I can remember, and really I never thought I'd see a time in Florida Atlantic's history where the football team is trying to rebound off of what the basketball team did. That is just still stunning to me that this is actually a realistic universe that we're living in. So Tom Herman comes in, has a lot of talent, but has a lot of work to do from what's been a pretty undisciplined team that didn't execute well in big moments over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, love that hire of Tom Herman way back when it transpired following last season. And because he was someone, you know, with the success Mike Houston's had in Greenville, you know, had we won a couple more games or so last year, you know, who knows what may have happened, whether Coach Houston would still be around or not. But, I was kind of thinking along the lines of an AD. You always had that list in your head, and he was someone that I would certainly would have wanted the Pirates to reach out to had something like that transpired. But, you know, we all know what a different animal that Texas job is.
Yeah.
And so I was like, when Texas made that decision to fire him after the 7-3 season, where all three of those losses were super competitive and came down to the wire, including, I think, a three overtime loss to Oklahoma.
Right.
So I really love Tom Herman as a football coach, and he's inheriting a roster that's pretty stocked for success from what I hear.
Yeah, and what's important to note, and I'm glad you mentioned the 7-3 season at Texas. I mean, you know as well as anybody, you follow the sport so closely, Bubba. I mean, that Texas job can just be a soul-sucking experience. And so very little patience, and there's constant movement in the background, and money people are maneuvering, pulling the strings. And so when Tom Herman left, he was ready to step away from the game a bit and did that. And so he comes into Boca Raton now, and he inherits an offense that is extremely skilled on the outside. It has a lot of extremely talented wide receivers, including LaJonte Wester, who is a speedster, who was one of the most dependable receivers in all of Conference USA last year, an explosive wideout, a collection of receivers. However, the quarterback position is still up for grabs. That's very much a competition going into the fall. Nikosi Perry, the former Miami quarterback that transferred for his final 2 years of college football to FAU, he is now departed. He has graduated. And so now you have to really sort of dig in and see what is there from a quarterback perspective. There's a very good running game with Larry McCammon and Jabari Mobley that'll be behind whichever quarterback wins the job. A fairly consistent offensive line, bringing back four starters from a year ago, that will be helpful. It was an offensive line that certainly had its ups and its downs in Florida Atlantic from an offensive standpoint, was middle of the pack in Conference USA. Defensive standpoint, middle of the pack in Conference USA. Could come up with big plays, but could give up big plays. Did nothing spectacular. Did nothing consistent. And so that's going to be the task for Tom Herman and his coaching staff. It's going to be, can you bring consistency to a roster that has a lot of speed, has a lot of talent, has a lot of upside. But moving to a new conference, now your job is to try and make it more consistent, to make it more disciplined, to keep the defense from giving up the explosive plays. There were holes and injuries in the secondary a year ago. Can you fix that? Can you avoid some of those calamities? Back-to-back years, Florida Atlantic lost home games in the regular season finale that would have made them bowl eligible. I talked about the big moments earlier. That certainly enters the discussion when you're talking about the job that Tom Herman has to do. So, I mean, you assessed it well, Robert. There's a lot there. There's a lot of talent. It is there, and it's available to be tapped. That said, it's more than just talent, as you guys know up in East Carolina. It's got to be formed into something. It needs to be molded. It was not molded well enough the previous three seasons, and so Tom Herman comes in and hopes that in year one, where he probably has enough talent to make things interesting in the American, can you get these guys on a frontward trajectory? And that's really going to be the battle.
Yeah, preparing for this interview, you know, looking at some of the personnel returning, the quarterback situation is something that did jump off the page with those transfers coming into the program. So if you would just elaborate a little bit more on the likes of Richardson, Johnson, and Thompson.
Yeah, so Richardson comes in, and he is a former Central Michigan man. He's a South Florida guy, and he comes in and received a lot of first-team reps in the spring. So you're sort of eyeing him. He was definitely a high-profile transfer and a lot of eyebrows raised, and it was very popular in South Florida circles that he's coming back home after playing with Jim McElwain at Central Michigan. He's going to have to improve his accuracy, however. In the spring game, he was very, very positive, showed a lot of flashes, but what are you 100% taking from a spring game? So that's what's going to have to be applied into the fall. He was not especially consistent during spring ball, but did show out in the spring game. That's the good news. Now, as far as Michael Johnson is concerned, he is formerly of Penn State. He was working under his father at one time, under Willie Taggart. Michael Johnson was the offensive coordinator at Florida Atlantic in Willie Taggart's second year. He went on to new endeavors. So Michael Johnson comes in, and he is someone that has battled injuries in his time at Florida Atlantic. He battled injuries in his time at Penn State. He's an ultra athlete. He doesn't have the most accurate arm at all. He is a mobile quarterback. He's someone that can get out on the move, get out on the run. He's someone that really needs to work on throwing on the run. But he has shown, even during the last season in practice, during the regular season, he is improved. He has leadership capabilities. There's a lot of athletes in that quarterback room. Can they turn into guys that can consistently distribute the football, all while knowing you have, if healthy, a strong ground game behind you? And as far as Thompson is concerned, he's going to come in. He's going to be involved in the mix. He's going to be in this quarterback discussion. But things get crowded. Reps get crowded when there's three guys who could conceivably win the quarterback competition going into the fall. It is very much up for grabs. So he's going to have to early catch coach's eye and early have to earn himself some more reps going into the season opener against Monmouth. Because, again, and Lane Kiffin went through this in his time at Florida Atlantic as well. He had quarterback competitions every single year. You have to get noticed. And with three guys, and especially someone who started at Central Michigan, someone who saw time at Penn State, you've got to fight for those reps. But it is very, very, very up in the air. I mean, Bubba, when I'm breaking down these quarterbacks, there's no discernible distance that anybody has set themselves ahead of any of the other quarterbacks coming out of the spring. So it's very much hit the reset button day one of fall camp without question.
If that question is successfully answered, it seems as though with the other personnel at the skill positions as well as what returns on the offensive line that the Owls could be a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, Jaquan Burton and LaJonte Wester are really, really, really good. I mean, they are. And then you've got someone who came up real strong in the final five, six games of last season, Tony Johnson, who has very, very strong hands. Not the fastest receiver, but very much the most significant possession receiver that FAU has. There is speed for days on the outside when it comes to this offense. It's just, can they get the ball And that's going to be the question. And how can this coaching staff creatively get the ball in the respective hands of these burners on the outside? As far as the ground game is concerned, like I said, it's going to be anchored by Larry McCammon and Zuberi Mobley. McCammon, especially over the last couple of seasons, has been a top two or three running back overall ability level and production level in Conference USA. Mobley is a bowling ball, makes guys miss, eats up a lot of carries, a lot of the percentage of the touches, and FAU is going to be capable of grounding teams down with the run. That will give the quarterbacks at least a little bit of a cushion early on in the season to get comfortable. The ground game is going to be a major asset to Tom Herman, and that offensive line is big. That offensive line is beefy. That offensive line is experienced as well in front of whoever wins the quarterback competition. They were strong in pass protection a year ago. They were very good as far as run blocking is concerned. There's no reason to believe that FAU shouldn't be able to come into the American and at least be middle of the pack when it comes to sacks allowed and yards gained on the ground. And from there, it's a question of, can FAU's passing game get itself to a level that everybody believes that it can be? And then perhaps you have something going. I'm under no illusion that FAU certainly has question marks across the board on offense, but it more comes from how can you get the speed, the ball? There is a ton of speed to work with. How do you delineate who gets touches and when and who's going to be best served to deliver that football? Those are the most pressing questions going into the season opener against Monmouth in the month that will lead into going in that on the practice field.
Shifting over to the defensive side, I know a season ago it was a struggle allowing nearly 40 points a game, 425 yards. So what can you tell us about who Coach Herman brought in to coordinate the defense, first of all, and then I know a lot of the personnel is back, correct?
Yeah, a lot of the personnel is back, including the big 300-pound defensive lineman who was flirted with by almost every Power 5 in the country in the transfer portal, and that's Evan Anderson, big number 8 along the defensive front. He anchors everything. And you mentioned the points allowed, and that was certainly a sticking point, and that hurt. And the problem is, it was only about 3 or 4 games that ballooned that points per game allowed. Everything was fairly consistent, but unfortunately, when you get dinged to the extent FAU at times got dinged last year, and again, in only 3 or 4 games, it becomes extremely difficult to not have people questioning the acumen of the defense. Florida Atlantic is very, very, very skilled on the outside. Smoke Mungin leading the corners at the boundary for FAU defensively, but health was such a problem for FAU last year. It seemed like the corners, there was a new corner down every single game requiring medical attention, missing games. The hope is the depth is improved, but you also hope the depth isn't needed nearly as much it was needed a year ago. As far as the defensive coordinator is concerned, Rock Bellantoni comes in after a stint at Auburn. Prior to that, he was at Utah State and Washington State. This is the second go-around for Rock Bellantoni at Florida Atlantic. He was the defensive coordinator, first linebackers coach, then defensive coordinator under Charlie Partridge when he was the head coach at Florida Atlantic before Partridge was let go after the 2016 season and inherited the role he has served since, which is associate head coach at Pitt. But Rock Bellantoni gets the call again, second go around as a defensive coordinator, and the hope is that he's going to be able to maximize what Florida Atlantic has on the defensive side. And again, this was a heavily penalized bunch a year ago. Really struggled through portions of the season, keeping the penalty yardage at even a medium as opposed to a minimum. So if things can stay without flags hitting the field, there's enough there for FAU to at least be formidable in a highly offensive American Conference. That said, you got to make sure that you stay healthy. Sometimes that's easier said than done. But Rock Bellantoni, I would say probably a couple fewer question marks on his side of the ball as compared to the offensive side of the ball, at least going into this 2023 campaign.
Taking a look at the 2023 schedule, you reference opening against Monmouth, FCS foe, and then Ohio out of the MAC travels down to Boca. So certainly not gimmies by any stretch, but at the same time, if you're going to play at Clemson and at Illinois, you like the way it sets up in September.
Yeah, yeah, no question about it. And Ohio is going to be a sticking point for this team. Florida Atlantic went up to Athens a year ago and had a second half lead and just completely melted down in the fourth quarter, got thrown all over. And I talked about how three or four games ballooned that points per game allowed for that FAU defense. That Ohio game was absolutely one of them. That was a head scratcher. That got away from FAU in a massive way. And so welcome into Ohio down to Boca Raton in what should be swamp-like tropical temperatures. FAU certainly has that one circuit on the calendar. And then, as you mentioned, you got Clemson coming up, and then you got Illinois after that. Two bruising teams, two different styles of how they bruise you out of the upper echelons of the Power Five. So you're exactly right from a mental standpoint. Playing well, executing well, handling business against Monmouth, and then getting some revenge against Ohio. That's the best possible situation for you to enter those games against Clemson and Illinois. And then you start American play and a new endeavor, a new journey in FAU football program history gets underway with a conference that is going to be absolutely fascinating, especially because there are a couple of teams out of the Conference USA entering the American, including UTSA, that I think are going to be able to compete for an American championship right off the bat. This is going to be top to bottom, and I understand the consternation from American teams. Conference USA squads coming in. You lose Houston. You lose UCF. You lose Cincinnati. I understand the hand-wringing over that, but I'm telling you, there is quality. There are quality football teams coming in that are going to make this one heck of a football conference.
No doubt. Like you mentioned, UTSA, heck of a program. Very impressive what Coach Traylor has done there. And that fan base really gets behind the Roadrunners.
Yeah.
So just talk about how the schedule is for the Owls within the American, in addition to hosting the Pirates on November 11th.
Yeah, so Florida Atlantic will go to USF, and so USF has certainly had its issues, but I mentioned USF first because that's the new regional rivalry for Florida Atlantic. FAU has spent his entire existence with FIU, still in Conference USA, is the rival, not on the schedule this year, so USF is going to be the team that FAU travels to with this new rivalry. And then a couple more teams that come to mind, Florida Atlantic and Tulane. That certainly is a game that's marked on the schedule. You also go down the line and Conference USA teams that FAU is going to be playing again in year one. Charlotte, who FAU has handled in a massive way going back to the Conference USA days. Florida Atlantic gets another crack at Charlotte. FAU is also going to be at UAB, a place that they have struggled mightily the last couple of seasons. And for Florida Atlantic, this is really going to be a feel-it-out process. Speaking of the American teams, I mean, you've got the American holdovers, and then you have the newcomers to the American from FAU's Conference USA. This really is going to be a feeling-out process. Like Bob, I'm telling you, I think that there's enough talent here to win ballgames in the American, but you can't be mistake-laden. You can't be mistake-prone. You can't have the calamities that FAU would have from a penalty standpoint or from a blown assignment, late game, late instance, lack of execution perspective of FAU is going to be in the discussion going into the final month of the season. So this is going to be a massive barometer for this FAU team. And again, having the opportunity to go against East Carolina, having the opportunity to go against Tulane, having the opportunity to get a crack at Charlotte and UAB. This is going to be significant for this program, but I'm telling you, this FAU team may not fully even know what it is coming out of the four games in the non-conference going into American play. There's just so many questions about who's going to play where. How can this be best facilitated? It's certainly not ideal for Tom Herman, but I think he's accepted the fact that this is very much going to be a work in progress throughout the course of the year, and there's going to be ups and downs with it. Coming into a better football conference won't help the cause, but it's certainly going to help this team improve as time extends on during the course of the campaign.
I believe here within the last few weeks that Coach Herman was on with Jim Rome, and Jim Rome was asking Coach about the excitement of the basketball program, and then how he is attempting to parlay that into success on the gridiron. So, you know, what can you tell us on that front? And then also the fan base, all the excitement surrounding the Final Four appearance, and then hiring such an excellent football coach. Are you seeing that carry over? Like, how many season tickets have the Owls sold?
Yeah, so FAU is actually up around 35% more season tickets sold than they were last year in football. And I think a lot of that has to do with the carryover effect from the basketball program. FAU's basketball program is going to have every game sold out this season. And so this is just a carryover effect. And what I appreciate about Tom Herman is that there are some schools where new football coach comes in and he's trying to establish his own thing. And he's trying to make sure that he's focused on his program and wants to build it independently. But Tom Herman from second one, and he came in right in the thick of FAU basketball in the midst of a 20-game winning streak a season ago, immediately threw himself right in the middle of the frenzy that was FAU basketball, traveled to road games, was at the Conference USA tournament, was at every NCAA tournament game, even during the course of spring ball. And so he, instead of, hey, this is FAU football, this is our own thing, we ply our own path, he understands the importance of using the excitement around basketball to propel this football program, constantly referencing them, trying to make sure that the excitement that people are feeling, some of the folks in South Florida that maybe had never gone to an FAU game, that have been caught up in the fervor of Florida Atlantic, that have gone out and spent money on the season tickets, putting out a product on the field, wrapping himself in the FAU basketball flag, trying to keep these people around and giving them an entertaining product. And he's fully embraced that. It's completely egoless from Tom Herman. And I have been extremely impressed with how he's tried to immerse himself in the basketball program. That hasn't always been the case at FAU with the basketball and football program. The intertwining, the ability to willingly work together and market and brand together. And both Tom Herman and Dusty May have really jumped aboard and have really become very good allies within the athletic department and on campus. And so everything that Tom Herman told Jim Rome, I wasn't surprised about that. And that just echoes more of what Tom Herman's told me and what he's told many in and around FAU. And don't think that it hasn't helped some of these donors and gift givers. It hasn't helped Tom Herman to help facilitate some of the very necessary financial obligations that need to be met from outsiders in the FAU community. So Tom Herman has tried to maximize it to the best of his capability, as he should, and he's done it in a very willing and exuberant manner. And I think that that is just an exemplary outcome. You had the 35-win basketball season. You had the Final Four, so why wouldn't Tom Herman jump aboard and try to rebound off of that?
No doubt. Ken, before we let you go, we appreciate your time this evening. And tell folks how they can follow you on social media for our viewers. You can see it there at the top of the screen.
Yeah, absolutely. At KLV1063, that's my personal Twitter account. As always, FAUsports.com for anything happening with Florida Atlantic, especially with East Carolina coming back as a conference brethren for Florida Atlantic. So feel free to research up. I'm looking forward to talking to you as we get through the football season, Bubba. But again, at KLV1063. I do answer DMs, just keep it classy. And it's always good catching up, my friend.
Yeah, I appreciate the visit. And, most prognosticators, have the Pirates and Owls somewhere in the middle of the pack in the American. But it would not surprise me to see either of these clubs, or perhaps both, vying to get into that top three or four and potentially pushing the likes of a UTSA, Memphis, et cetera, for a league crown.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I think you're right on with that, and I think it's going to be very wide open, which is going to make it very fun, and I am looking forward to stepping foot back in Greenville for the first time in quite some time, so I am pretty pumped for that.
Enjoy the rest of your summer, and we'll catch up here in a little over 3.5 months when the Pirates and Owls square off down in Boca.
Bubba, appreciate it. Looking forward to it. We'll see you in basketball season. We'll talk to you before the football matchup.
Take care. That is the play-by-play voice of the Florida Atlantic Owls, Ken LaVica. Appreciate his time this evening, as well as the play-by-play voice of the Gardner Webb Running Bulldogs, Phil Constantino, who joined us in our first half hour. Before we get out of here and wrap up this edition of the program, a few more thoughts and quotes from the new play-by-play voice of the Pirates, and that is Chris Edwards. Chris said, "I am humbled to have been entrusted with the duty as the next play-by-play announcer at ECU. A sincere thank you to Clay Walker, John Gilbert, and the rest of the ECU and ECU Sports Network family for allowing me to tell the stories of our student-athletes and coaches. I cannot wait to get to work on helping to chronicle this chapter of Pirate Athletics." He went on to say, "East Carolina University and Greenville have played such a huge part in my life, and I am so fortunate to have the chance to give back to the place that has given so much to me. While we look forward to our next chapter in ECU's history, it's important to not forget our past, and I'm going to strive each day to honor the memory and the legacy of Jeff Charles, who will forever be the voice of the Pirates." Excellent words there, and I know that's certainly heartfelt from Chris Edwards. Had the opportunity to meet Chris back in August of 2015 when he and Jay Sonhalter were calling the state's longest-running high school football rivalry. That is the Bell game between Kannapolis and Concord. And, certainly got to know Chris through the years with him coming on the show to preview East Carolina Duke baseball matchups. But, appreciate everyone tuning in. Again, you've been watching the Sports Objective on Facebook, YouTube Live, and you can pretty much find us on all podcast platforms. But for my entire team here at the Sports Objective, Kyle Barber, Dave Richmond, and Matt Semenza, I'm Bub Rosenbaum. We'll talk to you soon, and as always, go Pirates! Everyone, I copy that. Everybody gonna stand, go bananas. Feel that, baby, don't hold back. Every foot, every yard, every first down, every touchdown with the cannons blast.